anon he finds him, striking too short at Greeks. His antique sword, rebellious to his arm, lies where it falls, repugnant to command. Unequal matched, Pyrrhus at Priam thrives, enraged strikes wide, but with the whiff and wind of his fell sword, the unnerved father falls. Then, senseless Ilion, seeming to feel this blow, with flaming top stoops to his base, and with a hideous crash takes prisoner Pyrrhus' ear, for lo, his sword, which was declining on the milky head of reverend Priam, seemed in the air to stick. So as a painted tyrant, Pyrrhus stood, and like a neutral to his will and matter, did nothing. But, as we often see against some storm, a silence in the heavens, the rack stands still, the bold winds speechless, and the orb below as hush as death. Anon, the dreadful thunder doth rend the region. So, after Pyrrhus' pause, aroused vengeance sets him new a work, and never did the Cyclops' hammers fall on Mars' armor, forged for proof the term, with less remorse than Pyrrhus' bleeding sword, now falls on Priam. Out, you strumpet fortune! All you gods in general synod, take away her power, break all the spokes and fellies from her wheel, and bones around nave down the hill of heaven, as low as to the fiends. But who? Oh, who had seen the moblet queen run barefoot up and down, threatening the flames with Bison room, a clout upon her head where late the diadem stood, and all about her lank and all ortemate loins, a blanket in the alarm of fear caught up, who this had seen? With tongue in venom steeped, gainst fortune's stake, would treason have pronounced. But if the gods themselves did see her then, when she saw Pyrrhus make malicious sport in mincing with his sword her husband's limbs, the instant burst of clamor that she made would have made milch the burning eyes of heaven and passion in the gods. So the question is, why? Why would I share this story with you today? This project that we brought into 11 prisons, a total of 15 venues, 11 prisons, two churches, a couple of schools, a couple of theater venues, is a retelling of Homer's Iliad, using more modern language than Shakespeare's adaptation that I just quoted. And originally, it was because our director, Patrick Walsh, he had been leading a lot of theater projects in these prisons, working directly with inmates, training them to be actors. And let me tell you, I trained at the American Conservatory Theater. I've seen and done a lot of Shakespeare. Some of the best work I've ever seen has been at Two Rivers Correctional Institute in Hermiston, Oregon. These guys are serving 20 years to life, and their production of Winter's Tale is the finest production I've ever seen. So Patrick wanted to bring something to these inmates, something of excellence and worth that would speak to them and further this cultural discussion that we engage in when we do performance. We're all in this room together. We can see each other. There's not a screen. You're not listening on headphones. You're not in a dark theater, in a movie theater, right? We're seeing and feeding off of each other's energy when we're performing live. So he wanted to bring that gift to these inmates in the same way that these inmates had brought it to each other and to select audience members who were lucky enough to pass a background check and go through the five gates and put in your ID and then you get it at the end. All that, all the paperwork of going in to see a show at a theater. In the course of doing this project, we discovered that what we were really doing was knitting together audiences that do not get to be in community with each other as a matter of course. By bringing a show to 11 different prisons, we were the first in Oregon to do this. There was a unique alchemy that happens when you bring a show that has been seen by 180 guys at Oregon State Penitentiary, and then, you know, 20 folks at the transitional housing unit, and then a dozen folks at Coffee Creek or at Shutter Creek or all the different places that we went to. We were bringing those audiences with us. This was actually a jailbreak. We were bringing these folks with us to every show that we performed. And you could feel in the room the emotional truth of that moment. So the Iliad, why the Iliad? I mean, it's dead white guys, it's Greek. And you would think that at first glance it has nothing to do with our day-to-day life. But the fact of the matter is that for thousands of years, our civilizations, our cultures, have been caught in cycles of rage and trauma and violence. And that has played out in many, many different ways, in wars, in murders, in terrible, terrible ways. And luckily for us human beings, for as long as that's been part of our DNA, we've also had in our DNA this drive, this urge to take that trauma and make of it something else, something constructive, something healing, something informative, something that gives depth and meaning to a senseless and meaningless thing that we had to survive. So my thesis is that that's what Homer was doing. Homer was a veteran. Homer was deeply traumatized. Homer did terrible things. And he took that emotional truth and he made an epic poem that has survived thousands of years somehow. And I can tell you that that emotional truth, that gesture of taking this thing that I've been saddled with and sentenced to, take that, make of it a creative performance, make of it your own emotional truth, own it, examine it, be honest about it, be unsparing with it, don't hold back, right? But drive into it, be brave about it, tell yourself to be heartened with it. That was the message of our production. That is the message of our production. So that's why it was so meaningful for these audiences, and it continues to be. So we're kind of here on a a little publicity tour, I guess, where we're relaunching the tour. We're remounting this fall, starting October 13th. We're visiting about 8 different schools and 2 prisons and City Hall with this production. So the music you heard, I must be out of shape because my voice is already going. The music you heard, plus the 85-minute actual show of an Iliad. And yeah, I'll hand it back to Anna.
Can I speak into this microphone and be heard? Oh, good. So my intention in this moment is to share with you some excerpts from a journal that I kept last year when we did the tour that Paul was referring to, that I think was 15 or 16 performances, but definitely 11 prisons. So I wanted to share with you some direct experiences from that time. October 4th, 2018. Achilles says, "I never cried before I came to Troy, but in these last 40 days, I find myself crying every day. Since our first performance at Oregon State Penitentiary, that is true for me. Today, I couldn't get out of bed. My heart feels so heavy. My body hurts all over. I'm stiff and sore and sad. I remember the big friendly rec director who's a big Ted Nugent fan, the female corrections officer they brought in to pat me down whose new license plate says Frisk, the 3 checkpoints and 7 different locked gates we went through to reach the performance space. I keep remembering the glow of Jeremy's face, I've never worked with a sound guy so enthusiastic and warm. I keep remembering Tim saying, "It's hell in here. This place is hell." And yeah, there's some bad guys in here, but mostly it's a lot of men who need to get home to their families. He talked about his kid who's growing up for 12 years without a father. Rod, the corrections officer in his 60s who'd never seen a play before. The guy in his 50s who said he'd never considered before how these great heroes who died in battle weren't heroes to their mothers who lost them. So many had studied this story in school. They were so affected by the list of wars. That came up a few times in the talkback. The single biggest thing is the overwhelming reality of how much they appreciated us, how moved they were by the work, how important it was that we were there. I can't count the number of hands I shook tonight and eyes that met mine with earnest gratitude. October 11th. The thing that is happening to me as I do this work. I knew intellectually before I entered a prison that we're all one community, that I would go inside and encounter people who are human beings just like me, that we're all related. But I go into these places and we have this profoundly connected experience together of this moving piece of art, and all the walls come down and we are all one great heart beating. We are all one holy being. And knowing that in my body, while I see what is being done to them, it is unbearable. It is not bearable. Because they are me and I am them, and this is so broken, so wrong, so devastating, and so I begin to understand why we put them out of sight, out of mind. Because if we truly let in what is happening, what we are doing to ourselves with the violence of incarceration, we simply could not do it. October 19th. At Two Rivers Correctional in Umatilla, the audience was clearly captivated and with us the whole time. So much enthusiasm for the music. The redheaded guy in the front row said he openly wept for the first time in prison, saying it wasn't a place it was okay to do that. Another guy said he usually gets bored at some point during plays or lost, and this was different. He was with us every second, picturing everything. They asked if I used ancient Greek modes in the composition of the score. They thanked us again and again. They shook our hands. October 20th, Eastern Oregon Correctional Institution. We played in a gymnasium. The guys sitting on wooden bleachers pulled out from the wall. The mood before the show was almost festive for a prison. There was popcorn for everybody, big paper lunch bags full of it. I remember the talk back. Paul choked up when he told them he could feel them bringing their ancestors and their stories into the room. When I talked about the heart connection we were making together and then giving public performances being a way to pull the prison walls down and rejoin our community, they applauded. One man quietly told Paul afterwards that the play made him think of events he'd been pushing out of his mind for a long time, and he was grateful for having to remember them and look at them. I'm nervous about our public performances, the scrutiny of colleagues. But now as I write that, it fades because I understand we're bringing them a different gift. We are connecting them to all their forgotten kin inside the prison walls. We are inviting them to experience this art with the awareness that these imprisoned people are sitting right next to them. October 27th, from Oregon State Correctional. I remember the white guy with lots of tats who has a few years clean and sober, who said he goes to TV for entertainment but finds it mind-numbing. But then there will be a commercial that tugs at his heart, and he said that we did that the whole time. I remember the soft-spoken young black man who asked me about how I made choices as a composer and how the music evolved over time. I remember the young white guy with a blonde beard, balding a little, glasses. It was his first play, and he said, "I want to do this. I want to make my family and my community laugh and cry." He also asked what they could do to help bring us back, if they could do a fundraiser or something. I remember a guy way in the back with tattoos on his neck said he appreciated us talking about rage. because he himself and so many in this room are addicted to it. October 30th, we had our first public performance at St. David of Wales Church. It was a big audience. I remember toward the end of the war list, something coming a little unhinged in me, and I started truly grieving, sobbing through the cello, and I could feel with my eyes closed the weeping in the audience. There was a woman there whose son is at Oregon State Penitentiary. She came because he told her it was great and she needed to go see it. We stared into each other's eyes and started to cry together. I held her in my arms for a long hug and felt her body shudder with quiet sobs. November 6th. I feel depleted, worn down to bones and nubbins of nerves, a clattering basket of shells, only a little bit alive, used up. Last night was our last performance of an Iliad. We were in the medium security side of Coffee Creek, the women's state prison. Once we got through the initial building, the metal detector and x-ray machine, the checking in of all our gear, and then an additional checkpoint where another guard behind glass checked our badges, we crossed the green, which was half grass, half blacktop. This is the third or fourth administrator, eager to point out the place where they have an annual carnival for the inmates' kids. That's right, tell us about the thing that happens one day a year. Don't mention the other 364 days when this is simply the moat around the dungeon, the space between the prison walls and the endless fences of razor wire. When we entered the building that houses the women in medium security, through two giant heavy metal doors, we stepped into a long hallway with a mural covering one wall. It depicts a history of war, a timeline of American wars in tan and brown, a history of war painted on the wall of a prison by incarcerated women. The four of us walked, looking up and gaping, the whole of the story we were there to tell painted on the wall. November 26th. Today there was a flood of tears for the people I met in prisons. I miss them. My heart is aching for them. I feel the loss of them in me. I feel how isolated they are, how they've been taken from us, and we need them. How are we supposed to get out of this mess without all hands on deck? How can we heal our culture when families and communities are broken and scattered, separated by walls and bars and razor wire? What can I do? Where are you calling me, O Holy One? I'd like to end by singing a song together. It's a song that I wrote called I Hold You Up. There's a choir at Coffee Creek, the women's prison, and the choir director there has been using some of my songs. And apparently this one, the choir, for the last couple of years, the choir has insisted on using this song to close every rehearsal. So since I learned that, I can't sing it without thinking of them. So I'll sing it once through, and then you can join me in a call and response. I hold you up in the light of God. I hold you up in my own heart. I hold you up in hold you
high. I hold you high.
Cause the time is right.
Cause the time is right.
I hold you high. In the light of God,
in the light of God,
I hold you high.
I hold you high.
In my own heart,
in my own heart,
I hold you high.
Hold you high.
In the healing.
Time is right.
Cause the time is
right.
Cause the time is right.